It's funny, because this is what I do for a job. Like, I speak to people, I teach teachers, and I'm nervous about this. I have done a commencement speech for hundreds of people, and this is freaking me out right now, so. Okay. So first of all, if you don't know me, I am Melissa Scoville. I have been coming to, hello. I've been coming to the Shepherd's Fellowship since 2020. And this today has been years in the making. So before I start, will you join me in prayer so I can get through this? All right, Lord, this is all you. Take away my anxiety, take away my fear. Let it be your words. This is your doing. I pray that somebody here can feel this, can make a connection. I just pray you do what you do. Let me get out of the way. Let this all be you. All right. It's in your son's holy and precious name that I pray, Lord. Amen. Okay, so I didn't know if I was going to sit or stand. I'm going to sit. Get comfortable, like I'm teaching, right? Back to that. Okay, yes, I have all sorts of things up here. I'm going to use all of them. I'm really sorry. I did a search on what a testimony should be, and it said about 3 minutes. I'm sorry. It's not going to be 3 minutes. I apologize for that. I actually have 5 pages of notes. I'm really sorry. So those of you who like to count down can keep track each time I flip a page, and you know. I'm going to give my testimony, but I'm also going to follow it up with like a condensed version of a Bible study that I've done recently. I just felt like this needs to be more than just me sharing my story. Okay, so let's talk about growing up. I grew up as the granddaughter of a Baptist minister. My grandpa, Tom Lasley, was actually the pastor at Prospect Baptist Church. That's how I know Nancy, that's how I know Jenny, that's ultimately how I came here. I will tell you though, my grandmother, was the daughter of a Methodist minister. And it was truly my grandma who, we had a very difficult relationship, but she made me fear the Lord. When I was growing up, I just knew the Old Testament the Old Testament God, the one who was angry, the one who was vengeful, the one who anything I did would have consequences, negative, anything that I did. I vividly remember playing cards one Sunday in church, and whew, I ended up like being spanked and screamed at, and it was terrible. So I didn't have a loving relationship with the Lord. I followed him because I was afraid of what might happen. When I was 10, I said, I accept Christ, I want to be baptized. And ultimately, when I look back at it, I think that was because I didn't want to disappoint anybody. My grandpa was going to retire soon. I wanted him to be the one to baptize me. I believed in God, but did I love him? Not sure I loved him. I think I was just fearful of him. And then a couple years later, my parents got divorced. My mom remarried. My dad dated a woman, then married her. I wasn't a fan. I was full of anger. I would say that was when I started my walking away. I always still believed in God, but he was not my friend. He was not somebody that I reached out to. In college, I began to question everything. I saw people who didn't live great lives seem to have wonderful, they weren't godly, they weren't Christians, but they seemed to have wonderful things coming to them. And I was like, there's no way that, that just happens. God's just giving these lives to them. I did my own thing. I found joy. It was temporary. I was hanging out with the wrong people and just doing things that weren't appropriate. And then in 2004, I graduated with my master's and taught my first year, and I was like, this is it. Like, I can teach. I am a teacher. This is my calling. Again, never gave any of that glory to God. That was just, this is what I'm supposed to do in life. But I felt like something was missing. I still had this growing up, every woman is supposed to become a wife and a mother. And I was missing that in my life. So it was time to start looking. And in 2007, I met Jeremiah. Many of you here know Jeremiah. He came from a Christian family, which honestly, when I think about it, like it wasn't that that meant anything to me other than his family must be loving, right? So I'm gonna fit in with his family. My family loved him. He was wonderful, but he had a secret. And that secret was alcoholism. Sorry. And at the time, we were living in sin, and I just looked at his alcoholism as a direct punishment for me because of the choices I was making. But I stuck with him because I loved him. And that's what I was supposed to do. So we were going to make everything right. And this was 2007. In 2012, we got married. Marriage was going to make everything right with God. We were no longer going to be living in sin. It was going to make everything perfect. And it didn't. I've been here for Tom's stories, and he was like, if you haven't gotten married, don't. It's very tough. Whew. He's not wrong. And it was soon after that I realized I couldn't bring children into that relationship, into our marriage. Looking back at it, like I was writing this down, I was like, I decided that. That wasn't me deciding that. That was God telling me it wasn't gonna work. And for 12 years, I protected this secret, this alcoholism. 12 years, 5 years of us dating, 7 years of us being married. I told no one. I didn't tell my family. I didn't tell my friends because it was my job as his wife, or so I thought, to protect him for better or for worse. This is what I signed up for being his wife. And then in 2018, my dad died unexpectedly. Sorry, I keep crying through this whole. I didn't cry when I practiced this at home, okay? My dad died unexpectedly. A month and a half later, Jeremiah's boss died unexpectedly. A month after that, my uncle, who Jeremiah was very close to, died unexpectedly. And for a man who held the secret, he didn't have any friends. I was his friend, and he didn't tell me how much he was hurting. And that's when things really, really got bad. So for a year, I lived in utter chaos. I mean, it was chaos. And there were no other options but God. I was at a point where I was like, there's nothing left for us to do. I don't know what we can do. How do we save our marriage? 2020 came, I was on Facebook, and I was friends with Jenny. And they had posted that TSF was having the mental health series. And so I was like, you want to do this? He knew we had a problem. He was like, yeah, let's do it. Let's do this. So we came and we sat through anxiety, which that's me. My whole life has been an anxious child, anxious adult. We sat through depression, which he suffered from. We sat through suicidal ideation, which unfortunately, being a teacher, I've lost several students to suicide. We sat through addiction. And I thought, this is it. This is going to change it, right? No, it changed things, but it didn't fix the addiction. But being here, I found friends. I found it. Ultimately, what happened was it started becoming a routine. It became a habit, and a habit that I needed to feel complete. Like, I used to dread Sundays because I had to go to church or go to work the next day. But now I was loving Sundays because I walked out fulfilled. And then, as we all know, COVID happened and church shut down, but we were still joining every Sunday. I'm so thankful for, you know, the fact that we had the live feed. So it was great. And looking back at it, ultimately, the timing was because of God. The fact that we were able to come here before COVID happened, we started that routine, that's all God, right? That there was no other explanation for that. At the end of 2020 was the first time that Jeremiah experienced true sobriety while we were together. He was sober for 67 days. All of those were while he was in rehab or at a sober living. But when he came home, it was back. Throughout 21 and 22, there was a continual struggle. And then August of 2022, I think I finally succumbed to the idea of giving up control to the Lord. There was an evening I was trying to get Jeremiah to, he was struggling, and I was trying to get him help. I had taken him to a mental health emergency room, and they told me they could do nothing for him. And I was like, what am I supposed to do with him? And they said, well, take him to an actual emergency room. And I said, around the corner? And she said, no, you gotta go down to Riverside. So I had to drive him in my car, and we get to Riverside, and he jumps out of the car and starts running towards the highway. And I just threw my hands up, and I was like, I'm done. I can't do this anymore. And I gave it all to God at that moment. And, oh, gross. Nice. And he was sober for 7 months following that. Oh. I got to tell you, that very next day after that was like 10 o'clock at night, I got up and went to work. Like, I told you control is something that how did I have control in that moment? That's what I longed for, control. That was my addiction, control. But I look back at that and I realize I was not in control. That was God leading me. In September of 22, I was baptized again. And that time when I was there was when I really knew, like, I was giving my life to the Lord. He was who got me to where I was. I wasn't doing it to make anybody happy. In fact, my grandma was still alive. She lived to 103. We had a wonderful relationship. Well, a month away from 103, I'm sorry. We had a wonderful relationship. But I didn't tell her about it because I wasn't doing it for her. I told her about it afterwards. I was doing it for myself, for the Lord. During those 7 months of sobriety, I had peace. He was safe. He was with others. He was living his best life. In March of 2023, Jeremiah returned home. And when he came back home, he started drinking again. In June of 23, he got an OVI. And let me tell you, like, even though he drank, he loved the Lord and he loved this church. The OVI was actually on his way to church because he was bound and determined to come here. But it was during that time that I realized that I was going to have to be with him 24/7 to keep him sober. It was not my job to keep him sober. I could not live life like that. So he went back to rehab again, and it was not an easy decision, but I left and I filed for divorce. Oh, and let me tell you, like, for somebody who felt like they were constantly disappointing people, I felt like I was committing the ultimate sin. Like, I was supposed to be with him through thick and thin, for better, for worse, for in sickness and in health. Like, I made this commitment to him, to God, and I was leaving it. I moved to Urbana, so I was now further away from my church, but I kept coming. I knew this is where I needed to be. This was my family. This is where I felt the Lord. In June of 2024, I brought my my little notebook here. Tom gave us some, you know how he gives us assignments when we're sitting there and we're supposed to be doing something. I'm pretty sure we were supposed to be doing something else, but my mind in that moment wrote down a prayer, and then Tom was like, oh, what did you do? And I came up and said the prayer, but I don't think I was supposed to. Anyways, here's what my prayer was. June 2nd of 2024. In 2 weeks, the hardest year I have experienced will wrap up, and I will pray that when people congratulate me for making it through, that I give all credit to God. I also pray that I continue to seek him in the peaceful times and thank him for the peace and not get complacent in it. So June 2nd, 2024. June 12th of 2024, our divorce was finalized, and I was like, okay, I can move forward, right? Like, this is good. On August 1st, so what is that? Like, not even 2 months later, I received a call from Jeremiah's father that he was in ICU. My greatest fear had come true. On August 16th, he passed away ultimately from his alcoholism. But looking back at it, I know he was ticked. He was so ticked that he had to live for those 3 weeks in ICU. But man, our family was so thankful. We all got to say goodbye. I know that Jeremiah was sober when he came to the Lord. And I know that he had time to come to peace with everything during that time. So I was like, man, can't get any worse, right? This is it. I think about you, Amanda, for this next part. Like, people might laugh at us when it comes to dogs, but my dog Jackson was my baby. He was with me through all of this. And he passed away at the end of November. And then, very beginning of December, I got diagnosed with breast cancer. Oh, gosh, really? So in 2025, I had surgery. I had chemo. Oh, that was a battle in and of itself. The last thing I wanted to do was lose my hair. I am not a feminine person. I just felt like my hair made me look like a woman. And I was going to lose it. Again, I think that was, Melissa, you have no control. So I should also tell you, chemo was optional. Like, I was, should I go through it? It'll increase my chances of survival by like 5%. I'm a math person. 5% isn't much. I did it. I prayed. I did it. That's why we have these curls now. During chemo, I was reunited with Jim, who, if you know, that Jim is my boyfriend now. We'd been friends for 20 years, and he brought me a toaster one day when I'm going to be honest, I was having terrible stomach issues. I could do all of the brat diet except for the tea. I couldn't make toast, so he brought me a toaster. I did radiation, and then in November, I looked it up, November 25th, we had our lukewarm wrap-up here. We were talking about living a lukewarm life. And we were meeting in groups. And within my group, I was looking at where I was really struggling, and I was struggling with Christian community. This is my church. You're my people. But I can't be here during the week. I'm driving an hour here to spend maybe an hour and a half here. And it just, I was... You know, that's where the Lord was tugging at my heart. And I mentioned to him, I know Cindy was in there, and I think Amanda Russell was in there, Katie was in there, and I said, I think I need to find another church. Very next week, Tom comes up to me and he is like, hey, I'm wondering if you're willing to step up and do some leadership here at the church. And I said, did you hear me last week when I said I might be looking for another church? He's like, well, I want you to take some time and pray about it. So I decided to, well, he didn't tell us at the time, he just said some leadership, be part of this Elders Plus group. So those of us who came together to help through the sabbatical. And I said, yes, I would do it. And he said, listen, I understand that you want to find somewhere closer. And you have my permission to go do that. So if at any point in time you feel that you can't continue with this, you're welcome to do so. Okay. I moved again. This time we moved to Springfield, so even further away. I bought the most beautiful home, and I want to use that home for the Lord. I know that I'm living there because of him. And then I found this very cool church down there. It's actually called The Fellowship. It also is not your traditional. It's located in an old service merchandise. Yeah, so not an old nursery, but an old service merchandise. It is very family, you know, oriented. Like, it just feels like home. Although I will tell you, I say that, but like the first two times I went, I sat. I just sat there, and then Katie, nope, is it upside down? No? There, better, still work, okay. Katie came and she didn't let me sit, she made me talk to people. So I talked to people and I ended up getting in this connection group, whatever. It's been great. And all of this I know is because of the Lord. Back in May, when we had our Elders Plus meeting, Tom had said, here's the lineup. Here's going to do everything. Here's who's going to do everything. And I just want you to know, if something happens, something falls through with one of our speakers, we do have a backup sermon. And I said, listen, I'm going to tell you right now, I volunteer. If you need me, it's time for me to share my testimony. And he said, this is awesome. Great. He's been pressuring me to do this for a while. But I was like, I'll do it. I gotta tell you, Mike, this is crazy. Like, earlier this week, I was like, this has been great. I am not gonna have to worry about this. This has been wonderful. Almost done, almost out of the woods. I know that God had me ready for today. So anyways, I just wanted to tell you really quickly, one of the things that I've been doing at the fellowship is a Bible study called He Speaks to Me. Sorry. What are you laughing about?
Oh, no. It's fine.
Okay. She's like, she looked at her watch. She's like, Melissa, this is way longer than 3 minutes.
I'm looking because I don't need to go to work.
Okay, so the Bible study is called He Speaks to Me by Priscilla Shire. I guess this is a great, I mean, she's been great from what I've seen, but like those have been who were in this Bible study are like, she's wonderful. Anyways, I was like, I can't just do a testimony and make it short and sweet. So I'm actually going to share with you the summarized version of what He speaks to me, because I'm hoping to share with you like the connections in my life to where He has spoken to me. So those of you who are counting, this is page 5. So this is the last page here, but I still have 2 books that I haven't shared yet. So anyways, letting the Lord speak to you. One of the things that I've learned is this whole idea of manifest presence. So manifest meaning visible or meaning obvious. And we can see His manifest presence, His obvious presence, usually, you know, when we look back at what has happened in our life. So everything that I just shared with you, I mean, I hope you can see that every step of it, everything was preparing me for where I am right this moment. Yeah, I mean, the fact that I'm not still crying, that right there is God's presence. So anyways, letting the Lord speak to you, we actually have been studying 1 Samuel chapter 3. So that's where I'm going to go. If you want to look, you're welcome to do so, but I am going to read it. Okay. Now the boy Samuel was ministering to the Lord in the presence of Eli. So just so you know, if you're not aware, Eli was like a high priest, and Samuel was to be his almost like apprentice. Eli was the mentor of Samuel. Okay, and the word of the Lord was rare in those days. There was no frequent vision. So nobody had heard from God in quite some time. At that time, Eli, whose eyesight had begun to grow dim so that he could not see, was lying down in his own place. The lamp of God had not yet gone out, and Samuel was lying down in the temple of the Lord where the ark of God was. Then the Lord called Samuel, and he said, "Here I am." And he ran to Eli and said, "Here I am, for you called me." But he said, "I did not call you. Lie down again." So he went and lay down. And the Lord called again, "Samuel." And Samuel arose and went to Eli and said, "Here I am, for you called me." But he, Eli, said, "I did not call, my son. Lie down again." Now Samuel did not yet know the Lord, and the word of the Lord had not yet been revealed to him. And the Lord called Samuel again the third time, and he arose and he went to Eli and said, "Here I am, for you called me." Then Eli perceived that the Lord was calling the boy. Therefore Eli said to Samuel, "Go, lie down, and if he calls you, you shall say, 'Speak, Lord, for your servant hears.'" So Samuel went and lay down in this place. And the Lord came and stood calling at other times, "Samuel, Samuel." And Samuel said, "Speak, for your servant hears." Then the Lord said to Samuel, "Behold, I'm about to do a thing in Israel at which the two ears of everyone who hears it will tingle." I'm going to stop for a second because this is where the reflection of, or the not reflection, the story, the reason why God spoke to Samuel comes into play. So we talked about Samuel having a childlike faith. We saw the kids here today, like their faith is so precious. There's nothing getting in the way. They don't stop and think, why is this happening? It's happening because of God. When I started here and I started learning about this loving God, not this vengeful God, not this God who was angry at me for everything I did, my faith was childlike. I was so excited. I was like, I can't wait to see what he can do for me. Another thing that they talked about was single-minded worship. So Samuel was lying down and he was close to the ark of God. He loved God so much. He was right there with him. That's what his focus was God. So interesting, again, I used to pray every morning on my way to church. Many of you were in those prayers, but I would remember, like when I got to this point, this is who I'm talking about. Whoops, I did it again. This is who I should be praying for. This is what I should be praying for here. And we had another sermon, and it was making sure that we were taking time with the Lord. So I ultimately changed my habits. I started getting up earlier. I started going into my spare bedroom and sitting and having a verbal, out loud conversation with the Lord and praying with him in that moment. Because when I was doing it in my car, like, yeah, it's praying for with him or to him in your car is great. But when that's the only time you're praying to him and you have to worry about, you know, a deer that ran across in front of you or the person that pulled out in front of you, your mind isn't single-minded. It's distracted. So I made time for him each morning. A set-apart holiness. So I was like, I am not set apart. I am not unique. They talked about being sanctified and holy. And when I think back to it, like my lifestyle, I was not perfect. Who is perfect? But I definitely had changed so that I could have a set-apart holiness. I wanted God to be who was in charge. I was volunteering with the youth. I was attending more things here at church because I could. Now, we know that that changed for a little bit, but still. This next one is my hardest one, being still. So obviously, Samuel was still because he was sleeping. He was lying down. For me, though, Tom always talks about how he could count on me to, when he says, "Who wants to speak?" And if it gets too quiet, I immediately have to jump up because I can't stand like silence. I have to break the silence. So being still was hard. But when I moved for the first time in my life, I had peace. I had time in the evenings where I didn't have to worry and I could just talk to the Lord. And I did. I mean, if somebody was looking outside, they thought I was crazy. Like, I'm sitting on my couch. This is what I did yesterday. I sat on my couch and talked to the Lord. But that's what I used to do. A sold out hunger. You were just so, kind of going back to that child, like you were just so desperate for the Lord that you're hungry for him. So Samuel was just so hungry for the Lord. He laid down outside the veil as close as he possibly could get, because he wasn't allowed in that room. But he wanted to be right outside. He wanted to be as close to the Lord as possible. And that's what I wanted in that moment. I knew God was the only reason I made it to where I was. Looking back, there is no way that I could look back at those past several years and smile. Like people say to me, how do you have joy? I have joy because I've been there and I know he brought me through. And I know life is going to be tough again, but I also know there are going to be amazing moments because of the Lord. And then a servant spirit. And I think about that and I'm like, was I being a servant back then? I don't know. Like, they talk about a servant spirit. You're leaving your own comforts behind and removing the excuses and using what has been given to me. And I'm like, I don't know that maybe I did, but that servant spirit back then. But right now in this moment, I think this is my servant spirit. Leaving my own comfort. So we got these books at the beginning of 2025. Very first page when I got this, I wrote down things I wanted to include in my testimony. Yes, it says it. Yes, include in my testimony. And then on the back, I said, how will I share? Facebook. Well, here we go. Facebook, right? Written. Got it down. Church, here I am. Whom might I impact? I put church, a non-believer, a coworker, and then my last one, this is the best. Why haven't I started? Well, I did write the very first thing because it's not done. He's not done. Avoidance, that's ultimately what I think it was. I think I was avoiding. And it's overwhelming. Like, being vulnerable and sharing these things is so scary and so overwhelming. And what if I just don't speak? Maybe all of this just came out and made no sense to anybody. But I did it. And I did it for the Lord. And I did it because I know God loves me and he prepared me for this moment. So with that, I'm finished. But I did. Oh, thank you. I hope it made sense. And I know Katie has some things that she wants to share, but I do want to pray before Katie comes up. So, Lord, I made it. Thank you. I hope that made sense to somebody, but those were your words. That's what you put on my heart. That's what you prepared for me. Oh, I love you. I am so thankful for you, your mercy, your grace, your kindness, your forgiveness, and ultimately your love, Lord. Thank you for my church family. I pray that you're with every single one of them today, through the week and through the rest of their lives, Lord. Hold them, protect them. It's in your son's holy and precious name that I pray. Amen.